Welcome back, everyone. This is Ryan Selkis. You're listening to another episode of Messari's Unqualified Opinions, where each week I discuss key industry trends with crypto's top investors, builders, and thinkers. Just a reminder, Messari is much more than a podcast company. So if you're an industry professional or crypto investor, head over to Messari.io and check out Messari Pro, our crypto toolkit that offers best-in-class research, advanced screening, and charting tools to keep you ahead of the investing curve, plus a new enterprise alerts tool. We're also hosting the industry's largest virtual event, the Mainnet, this June 1st through 3rd, with over 50 hours of programming, 100 confirmed speakers, and virtual networking that's so seamless, you'll feel like you're actually there. 50% of the profits are heading to COVID relief, so go reserve your spot today at mainnet.events. That's Messari.io for pro research and tools, and mainnet.events for the best virtual event you'll attend this year. With that, strap in for another episode. Going to be a good one. This episode of the podcast brought to you by Luca. Save money this tax season with Luca Tax, the only time-tested crypto tax software. Luca has listened to your feedback and now lets you calculate capital gains and losses, seeing the results using three different accounting methods side by side, all for free. You only pay if you want to see their detailed tax reports and submit your forms using their software. Luca supports unlimited transaction downloads from all major exchanges and wallets and helps you optimize your tax reporting so you can max out this year's refunds or minimize how much you have to pay. Luca wants to help Messari's Unqualified Opinions listeners save even more this year. So use promo code MESSARITAX and you'll get a discount. Much more importantly, you'll do your taxes correctly and stay out of jail. Download Luca Tax at Luca with two Ks, tax.com, and save money this tax season. This episode of the podcast brought to you by Crypto.com. We know times are tough. That's why Crypto.com is introducing three different measures to help its community with their new Crypto.com app and credit card. First, they're waiving the 3.5% credit card fee on all crypto purchases in the next 3 months. They're also offering 10% back when you use the MCO Visa card on food and grocery shopping. And as always, you can buy gift cards on the Crypto.com app from merchants like Whole Foods, Safeway, Burger King, and more, with 20% back on food and an additional 10% back on groceries. So download the Crypto.com app today. This podcast is presented by Blockworks Group, one of the top blockchain events and media production companies I've worked with. For exclusive content and events that could help you with insight into the crypto and blockchain space, check them out at blockworksgroup.io and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone. For today, we've got a special double feature where we're going to speak with two mid-cap crypto projects, Zcoin and Zilliqa. I'm talking to Ruben Yap, who's the co-founder and project steward at Zcoin, a privacy protocol based on the Zcoin implementation. We're going to talk about zero-knowledge proofs, but more importantly, how they think about their general ranking in the subsector of privacy coins, how they continue to build, how they think about security issues, and ultimately how they can move up the ranks to increasing relevance, not just for other investors, but for broad-based adoption for more private cryptocurrencies. Colin Miles, on the other hand, is the head of marketing at Zilliqa. We're going to talk about Layer 1 smart contract platforms, their sharded blockchain, and similar challenges that they face making headways against, in many cases, much, much better funded smart contract platforms and potential competitors. I think both of these gentlemen have interesting things to say, not just about how to garner mindshare, but ultimately how to rally ecosystem support, integrate with other blockchains and infrastructure companies, and how to think about trade-offs in their own network's security. I'm thrilled that they agreed to do this double feature. I think you're going to enjoy it, especially if you're in that 500 to 300 range in market cap and are continuing to build relentlessly, but have yet to achieve breakout success or widespread attention. It's a good one. We're going to kick off with Ruben, and then the back half of this conversation is going to be with Colin. So we got 1 hour, two 30-minute episodes. It's an experiment. We hope you like it. Let us know what you think by sending us a message or replying in the notes. Let's get right into it. All right, everyone. Welcome back to Messari's Unqualified Opinions. I'm Ryan Selkis at 2-Bit Idiot. I have another terrific guest tonight, live from the Citadel. As you can tell, he's got a much fancier background than I do. I got up my Zoom background game. I'm talking about Ruben Yap, who is the project steward at Zcoin. We're going to talk about what a project steward is. We're going to talk about Zcoin, one of the top privacy coin implementations. that's currently on the market, the history of the project, a little bit more about ZK Snark, some of the upcoming developments that Zcoin has on the roadmap, and I'm sure a whole host of fun compliance and other technical nitty-gritty. Ruben, you know, I like to start just by giving people the opportunity to introduce themselves and really just tell their own personal origin story, and then, you know, in particular, how you came to be involved with the project that you're involved with, which is Zcoin. So why don't we kind of take it from the top? What got you into crypto and ultimately got you to the point where you are now the steward of the Zcoin project and this international community?
Sure. So first of all, I was a lawyer for about 10 years. I guess I started maybe in like 2006 or so. And what actually happened was my government started censoring the internet. You know, it kind of started with like explicit content, and then it moved to P2P. And after that, it went to even things like political speech. So it was like a slow creep of censorship. And what actually happened was, to kind of circumvent this, I started a VPN company in about 2007 called Bully VPN. Mm-hmm. And what happened then was VPNs were actually considered a risky business. They kind of put it in the same category as adult entertainment. And as a result, I couldn't accept credit cards. I couldn't accept a lot of payment methods. And on top of that, as a privacy, focused service, a lot of people were then asking me, why don't you accept Bitcoin? And this was kind of like in 2012 or so. I didn't really know much about it. The first thing I found out was like, how do I convert this to cash? And I should have kept a lot more, but benefit of hindsight. And that's kind of my first foray. I started accepting Bitcoin at the end of 2012. So that was my first foray into cryptocurrency. Then after that, I just caught the bug. I went into mining, you know, lost a bunch of money on exchange hacks. went through the whole shebang. And I actually got really interested in early cryptocurrencies, such mm-hmm. as what was then Dogecoin, now Dash, and then Monero as well. And kind of like in 2016, I kind of like done most of the stuff that you could do with cryptocurrency. And I was really interested to see, okay, I really want to see how a project works from the inside and learn how things are being run and what it takes. And Zcoin was just launched in like September 2016. They had a really innovative way of approaching privacy. And I offered my services and I don't know how it became from like, you know, community manager to basically kind of like looking after the project right now. So that's mm-hmm. in a nutshell.
Yeah. One thing, Ruben, that I always am fascinated to talk about for projects that are in your size range, you have some advantages. The advantages are you can move a little bit more quickly. You can experiment with some of the newer technologies, and you know, move fast and break things seems incongruent with a privacy coin where you're trying to ensure that people's funds are being stored securely and totally off the grid. But at the same time, that has to be an important element of the strategy, because you're around the top 100, I think, in terms of market cap. So not nearly as liquid, orders of magnitude, smaller than some of the more well-known privacy coins, Zcash, Monero, in particular. And then, of course, Bitcoin with some of its privacy features. How do you think about positioning in general, but especially in a market like this, where it seems like, you know, we're a couple of years off the highs. It seems that there's more interest and enthusiasm that starts to migrate towards those assets that have more liquidity, that have greater levels of kind of ecosystem development. And I don't know what the threshold is, but there is a threshold where it's tough to remain, you know, a kind of going concern from a community standpoint. And yet, you know, it seems like you guys have been able to you know, find this balance and maybe stay above the kind of critical line, the critical threshold that you need to, so you don't lose community. It doesn't become just, you know, like a zombie project. Not that you're close to it, but I think you get what I'm saying, right? I don't know if it's in the, you know, outside of the top 300 or exactly where that line is. What is the strategy? And how do you think about success going forward? Is this a zero sum thing where you're competing directly and trying to absorb more market share? Or are there specific use cases that you think Zcoin is particularly well catered to solve for this type of end user?
I think that's a great question, because I think, you know, especially in this climate, you know, there's this growing idea of like Bitcoin is the only coin that matters, maybe Ethereum, and then, you know, maybe something in the top 10 or top 30. I think that's been like the common benchmark. And sure, you know, I do agree that, you know, of course, interest is always going to flow initially to the large caps. You know, they have a lot more momentum and such like that. But I, one of the things that Zcoin kind of positions itself is that, first of all, our privacy mechanism is actually pretty unique. And in the sense that, you know, many others, like, you know, like Monero, Grin and whatnot. I mean, we're a larger cap than Grin as well, even though they're pretty high profile. And the whole idea of them kind of hiding transactions in the crowd, right? So I guess the way I like to illustrate it is footprints in the sand, and how their models work are like, if I make footprints, I make a lot of other footprints around the kind of like obscure where the trail of my personal footprints are. Well, the idea of us, because we allow people to burn coins and then redeem them later for brand new ones with no previous transaction history, it's almost like a wave washing in, and like there's no more trail, right? I do think that's it's a better privacy model. And of course, like, you know, when you compare to Zcash, they have a really amazing technology. I do think that they're more on the bleeding edge of things, and it's highly complex. So what's actually been kind of happening there is that because it's so highly complex, they are very reliant on the ECC. That slowly is changing with the Zcash Foundation and stuff like that. But it means that if you want to be a decentralized project, but you're so reliant on the centralized team, that's an issue. For us, we still have a similar model, but the thing is that our privacy protocol is built on a much simpler construction while offering still very high levels of anonymity. So because like zk-snarks is so complex, it's almost like security through obscurity in a certain way. While for us, you know, you can deploy it, people can audit it easily, and we don't have trusted setup. We use like, you know, no moon math. So I think that's a really big thing that Zcoin has an advantage on the technical standpoint. Now, from a community standpoint, I don't think any coin has actually gone through this like bear market unscathed. Everyone has lost a community. And I mean, people may say, oh yeah, you know, you don't have the critical mass. I actually feel that a community of engaged people have grown towards this period. And I think it's because, well, first of all, I think honestly, we're one of the much more transparent projects out there. We've been like communicating not just the highs, but also the lows. Like, you know, when we got exploited for some of the cryptographic flaws. But I guess the idea is that as long as you have your morals and principles there, you know, people will gravitate towards a project that's community focused and also, you know, solving a real need. Which is privacy. And I feel that there is definitely still room for other privacy coins, because there's no perfect privacy coin. We all have different trade-offs, right? Like, you know, Zcash, you have their trusted setup, their complex stuff, but very high levels. And on Monero, you just have this kind of like cryptographic mixing. So, and I think it's really too early to tell who would be the winner. And I mean, we're still really in its infant stage, I would say, cryptocurrency. So I actually welcome that there's competition in that regard. In terms of liquidity, you know, I think this has actually been rapidly improving. I mean, we recently just got a USDT pair on Binance. So that's mm-hmm. great. But at the same time, it's not as if we're listed on the largest exchanges as well. It just needs kind of that push. And actually, our liquidity is a lot better than a lot of the coins that are higher up than us. Like, for example, like a great project like Decred or stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I do think that, yes, you're right, that, you know, in a bull market, you will always start with the large caps. And then, but I do think that as people, as the market progresses further, there's still definitely room for the projects that I guess are more volatile and less liquidity, but at the same time, maybe we're more undervalued. That's how I personally see it as well. Yeah.
So the you know, one way that you can you know, make inroads and attract people to the community is around tinkering with some of these new privacy protocols. And you were the first, I believe, to integrate Dandelion. Which you know, even today is, I think, somewhere on the Bitcoin roadmap. Whether that's something that's incorporated now or, yep. or later, talk a little bit about Dandelion, the original Zero Coin protocol, and then this new Sigma protocol. But maybe you start with Dandelion and some of the privacy preserving elements that you don't necessarily need to invent yourselves or that are not necessarily a core focus, but which you're able to experiment with earlier because you do have a little bit more flexibility as a mid-sized project.
Sure. So Dandelion, I mean, we need to distinguish it as a network layer privacy protocol as opposed to like mm-hmm. a blockchain layer protocol. So I guess the difference is that the blockchain layer protocol is about breaking the links, you know, hiding it on chain. While Dandelion is more about, okay, preventing an IP address from being associated with a transaction. So that's the key difference. And previously before Dandelion, you know, the ways to do it was just like connect through Tor or connect through, you know, a VPN and stuff like that. And obviously that's an outside service and not everyone wants to do that. Dandelion, how Dandelion works is that, yeah, it was developed by for Bitcoin originally, and for certain reasons, it's not being adopted yet. But Dandelion allows, instead, the problem that Dandelion hopes to solve is that, first of all, the way that Bitcoin currently propagates transaction is through a gossip protocol. I tell mm-hmm. another node, that node tells 8 other people that's connected to it, and vice versa. So if you look at it, it's almost like dropping a rock into the pond and then you can see it kind of ripple out. Now, scientists or like actually anyone with the necessary technical expertise, which isn't that high, can connect to enough nodes and observe how this transaction propagates through the network and therefore have a very good guess as to, okay, I think this transaction originated from this bunch of IP addresses. And as that person does more and more transactions, then obviously the chance of de-anonymizing that along with other data becomes a lot easier, right? And Dandelion, how it does that is by kind of breaking the ripple, making it a lot harder to observe the ripple by kind of bouncing your transaction off several nodes before broadcasting it to the public. So it's almost like suddenly it appears as if like there's 10 rocks being thrown mm-hmm. and like there's ripples everywhere, which makes it very hard to pinpoint where the originating transaction was. So that's kind of how Dandelion works in a nutshell. And since we implemented it, Grin and Beam and other, I think these are the other projects that currently implement Dandelion. So that's how it works. We implemented, I can't really remember when we implemented it, maybe about 1 or 2 years ago, and it's been working pretty well. It's pretty lightweight. But I guess it has its limits in the sense that it's pretty good because it's privacy on by default. You don't have to have anything. It's like, you know, you don't even see it as a user. You don't really have to think about turning it on or stuff like that. It just works. But it is not perfect against, let's say, state-level adversaries which have controls over, like, the ISP networks and stuff like that. So that's why we're also looking into more complex mechanisms like mixed nets in the future. But Dandelion is a good transitioner, a network layer protocol.
And the you mentioned an exploit of the Zerocoin protocol. Talk about that saga and the new... first of all, you know, what happened, and you know, what steps you took to kind of mitigate the damage, and how you've kind of made it through the other side now with the integration of Sigma protocol, the new zero knowledge proof mechanism. So Zerocoin, just by way of background, there was early overlap between the Zerocoin research and ZK Snarks and Zcash, correct?
Right.
So what divergence did Zcoin take early on in the life cycle of the project that led to this split and ultimately to this vulnerability?
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, Zcoin and... has no relation to the Zcash project. I guess the only link was the Zerocoin protocol came first. And the protocol that Zcash uses is called the Zerocash protocol. Although they have similar ideas about, like, you know, kind of destruction and then redemption and using zero knowledge proofs, the cryptography behind it is almost completely different. They have totally different cryptography, different assumptions, different constructions. And so I think in 2014, the Zerocoin paper came out, and our founder, Poromin, was actually studying under Matthew Green, who's a Zcash scientist, if I'm not mistaken. And he, of course, the author of the Zerocoin paper. And he, Poromin, really, really wanted to implement this. Of course, when Zerocash came along, it was supposed to be an improvement on Zerocoin in many aspects, like higher anonymity, better performance. But it relied on, again, it required a trusted setup. You know, a couple of guys have to kind of set this up and destroy those parameters. So you have to make sure that's done correctly. And it uses a lot of moon math. So it was a huge divergence because, yeah, you have this, you know, kind of like bleeding edge thing. Well, on the other hand, Zerocoin was a kind of more conservative approach. And back then, we felt that, you know, there's benefit to relying on RSA cryptography versus something like, you know, ZK Snarks, you know, pairing-based cryptography, because it was a lot simpler then. We took it, we actually improved upon it. You know, we had several, like, cryptographic improvements and hardening of the Zerocoin protocol. But what actually, I think it was maybe about one and a half years back, a cryptographic flaw was found in the Zerocoin protocol. And what that means is that basically there was a way that you can forge a proof that gets accepted even though you didn't, like, you could redeem coins even though you didn't really burn them. So that's a pretty big issue.
Just to be clear, this was different from the vulnerability that the Zcash team had discovered.
Yes, that was a totally different vulnerability. This vulnerability was not like a coding error. It was more of like an issue right in the nuts and bolts, the cryptography of Zerocoin. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so many people have seen the Zerocoin paper. So many people have adopted it, not just us, like PIVX and many other folks. And cryptographers, like top cryptographers, have gone through it, and yet it went unnoticed. So it's not as if because it was like a lack of trying. So we had then kind of seen some weird patterns. Like, we were seeing every block, there was like huge amounts of zero coin spends, and we were like, that doesn't look right. We took a look at it, and at first we were like, we don't really know what's wrong, but something's not right, because now there are more redemptions than burns. That totally doesn't make sense at all, right? So I guess that's kind of the benefit that of like a semi-auditable supply, because we could tell that something wrong was happening. And therefore, we contacted the pools, we contacted the exchanges to kind of suspend Zerocoin for the moment while we figure out what's wrong. We actually found out the issue relatively quickly, I think within maybe 2 weeks or so. And it was really a tough one to find. But we did a responsible disclosure. I think we saved a lot of other projects that were also using Zerocoin as well. And the thing is that we actually prior to that hack, we had actually already kind of stopped looking at Zerocoin, because we had always wanted to remove trusted setup. For the users that don't know what trusted setup is it was a ceremony that you had kind of have to create initial parameters and then destroy it. If it's not done correctly, if it was not destroyed correctly, or there's some flaw in the ceremony, which actually kind of happened with Zcash with the initial ceremony, people can actually print infinite coins out of thin air in a very undetectable fashion. So that's really bad. So removing that trusted setup is a great way to, improve trust of the system. Kind of ironic, but that's why we were working on Sigma, which was a similar construction to Zerocoin, but it didn't require the trusted setup. It actually came from a paper by some really good cryptographers like Jens Grot and Markov Kowai. So we took that concept further, and it was really interesting, because when we first took it, everyone kind of dismissed it to say that, why are you using this old technology? You wouldn't get good performance out of it. And we even spoke to some of the Zcash engineers, and they're like, ugh. But we actually managed to get it really, really competitive. And one of many proofs, this is a particular paper, is the basis of Lelantis, which is on Nick's privacy protocol. And everyone was really surprised as to the level of performance and anonymity that we could actually get from this system. So, yeah.
I guess, you made it through that one storm. It didn't kill the project, obviously. And Sigma has now been, included, and the upgrades have been made. You've got another major milestone coming up with the new ZK. Is it a ZK Snark?
It's called, it's actually still using the same zero knowledge proofs as Sigma. It's called one out of many proofs, but it adds certain additional blinding factors that makes it a lot more powerful. Like for example, now we have the burn and redeem. Now I don't even have to do the redemption. I can pass the right of redemption to someone else. So it's almost like a Z to Z transaction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that milestone coming up this year, what are some of the other major milestones that you're working towards to continue to advance the project and either promote additional adoption or include more application developers, get wider acceptance for the currency itself?
Sure. So one of the really cool things that Zcoin did was in 2018, I think we were like the first large-scale blockchain election of any meaning. It was the Thai Democrat Party that held its primary elections to elect its leader on our blockchain. And there was like 127,000 votes across Thailand. Now there's been talks about implementing this again, maybe with better, improved mechanisms as well. So we do see that, privacy, we want to kind of say like, hey, look, privacy is not just, there's this narrative that privacy is for bad things, but we're like, hey, look, privacy can be used for governments, for voting and other stuff like that. So we think that that's a very promising path to take our technology. And we have our new Elysium tokenization layer, which, yeah, you know, it's just like a basic token layer, but the beauty of it is that you still inherit all the privacy features of Zcoin. So let's say, yeah, I want to do voting. I have a voting token. Now people can like vote to an address so that it's anonymous but verifiable, or poll using that. And people can just create this themselves, right? Or on top of that, you say like, I want a hacker bounty token, and maybe hackers are more like privacy conscious. They're not going to accept Bitcoin or whatever. I mean, whatever people want to use it for. And you can do that using the Elysium layer. So that's pretty interesting. And that's set to launch maybe in the next 1 month or so. That's really close. Another thing that we are kind of quite different is that because we believe in as fair distribution as possible as we can for our coin. And we are proof of work coin. And we believe that if people can mine with commodity hardware like GPUs and such, it's a lot more inclusive, and it also helps to create community versus like those like, you know, ASICs, which basically is only the big boys who can play in that field. But the problem with dealing with commodity hardware is that you become a lot more exposed to 51% attacks, especially as a mid-cap coin. And like, you know, you have all these other coins that are using GPUs, and now you can like rent this hash rate, and there's no, like, I can attack a coin and I can still use my GPU, right? Well, if I'm an ASIC, if I attack a coin that I'm mining, you know, it's almost like a, like shooting yourself in your foot. So to kind of combat that, we have sometime this year, something called chain locks coming up, which allow, we have like a masternode layer that kind of makes sure that the incentivized nodes also help to secure the chain. Yeah, proof of work for distribution, which still provides security, but the chain locks means I also have to kind of take over a significant proportion of the master nodes to be able to do a double spend attack or stuff like that. So I think that's a really good way to have the distribution of proof of work while maintaining high security levels for a mid-cap coin. Yeah.
Awesome. Definitely looking forward to what the rest of 2020 has in store. Has the coronavirus impacted your roadmap at all, your hiring plans, other milestones or kind of key developments get pushed out? Or is it business as usual otherwise with a distributed team?
Well, I mean, in terms of working, I think it hasn't affected us. Most of us have been working from home anyway. It's, I guess, a good thing of being distributed. But on the funding side, it has been definitely very challenging. But I see it as, I don't know, I actually, and it's a weird way to say it, I'm actually glad that we had the downturn, because it makes, you know, first of all, it weeds out the projects that like just spending money for no good reason, right? It's like anyone who remains are hopefully the in it for the long term, because they've gone through this suffering. But definitely, because we're funded from the block reward, a price drop definitely hurts our budget. And one of the really cool things is that because we want the decentralized funding, we don't want to be just having a block reward forever. I mean, that's not good. So we have been actually starting new funding mechanisms, like the ZCS, which is the Zcoin crowdfunding system, similar to like Monero's CCS. That has been really good. Many people have contributed to funding side tasks of development, like, oh, you know, I want this integration, or I want like maybe a better GUI. So we have been able to raise funds from our community to actually fund those projects. And just 1 or 2 weeks ago, we launched an open collective, which allows people to donate or make a monthly contribution. So almost like a more free open source type of model where people can contribute. You know, they get perks, almost like a Patreon for open source projects. And we've been getting quite pretty nice donations. Like people have been donating like $100 USD a month, and every little bit counts. So we definitely had to scale back a bit on, I guess, like marketing and stuff like that. We have managed to retain all our developers and cryptographers, so we're still chugging along. And I think that's really important in this thing. But, you know, like marketing people and other stuff, yeah, those unfortunately had to be let go. So that's kind of how we approached it. Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, Ruben, really appreciate you joining for this conversation, and definitely looking forward to what the rest of the year has in store. Like I said, where can people find you online and the project?
I mean, we can go to our website at zcoin.io. We have a really active Telegram community at Zcoin Project, which also links to our Discord. So just go to zcoin.io. It has all the community links there, and we're really, you know, you can talk to me directly on the channel. So we're pretty open.
And and how about you? Are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter and on Zcoin Official. Personally, I'm Z Ruben Z. Yeah. So yeah, those are good ways to get in touch.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. And thank you, everybody that's tuning in either on YouTube or your favorite podcast player. We have another great episode coming up in just a few minutes. So look forward to hearing more about another project, which will be on a little bit later tonight. But Ruben, thank you very much for joining us. And I'll take a brief intermission and get right back with an interview with Zilliqa. Thanks again.
Nice.
And Ruben, take care. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Luca. Save money this tax season with Luca Tax, the only time-tested crypto tax software. Luca has listened to your feedback and now lets you calculate capital gains and losses, seeing the results using three different accounting methods side by side, all for free. You only pay if you want to see their detailed tax reports and submit your forms using their software. Luca supports unlimited transaction downloads from all major exchanges and wallets, and helps you optimize your tax reporting so you can max out this year's refund or minimize how much you have to pay. Luca wants to help Messari's Unqualified Opinions listeners save even more this year. So use promo code MessariTax and you'll get a discount. Much more importantly, you'll do your taxes correctly and stay out of jail. Download Luca Tax at Luca with two Ks tax.com and save money this tax season. This episode of the podcast brought to you by Crypto.com. We know times are tough. That's why Crypto.com is introducing three different measures to help its community with their new Crypto.com app and credit card. First, they're waiving the 3.5% credit card fee on all crypto purchases in the next 3 months. They're also offering 10% back when you use the MCO Visa card on food and grocery shopping. And as always, you can buy gift cards on the Crypto.com app for merchants like Whole Foods, Safeway, Burger King, and more, with 20% back on food and an additional 10% back on groceries. So download the Crypto.com app today. And I'm excited to bring another phenomenal guest to today's program, talking about Colin, head of marketing at Zilliqa, a smart contract platform based in Singapore. Singapore, right? It's late.
That's
here.
Right.
It's early there. But you've been trying to get this on the books for a couple of weeks, so appreciate your patience here. Zilliqa has been an early supporter and collaborator with Messari since way back in 2018. We're going to cover a lot of ground. We're going to talk about the platform itself, some of the key milestones and initiatives and community investments that are underway. And most importantly, you might be wondering why this is part of a double feature with a privacy coin. Well, one thing that we wanted to do was take a look at some of the top performing projects and projects that were continuing to operate maybe a little bit under the radar in the middle tier of the crypto market. So we talked to Ruben, the first part of this conversation, from Zcoin, one of the largest privacy coins, but still fifth largest on the depth chart. And now excited to have a similar conversation with Colin, about maybe some of the challenges of building community and ultimately finding a niche, carving out a niche in the smart contract realm as well. So Colin, before we do that, why don't we start off by just hearing a little bit more about your origin story. What made you first get hooked into crypto and how did you come to Zilliqa and make the leap from a non-crypto career into the Wild West or Wild East in your case of the crypto markets and in particular the smart contract markets?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Very happy to be on the podcast with you. And I'd like to just think about where I started. And it was actually in the dot-com era. So really back in the 90s, we started thinking about how to use digital currency even then. And it never really quite took off. So we went through the dot-com and I moved into mobile. And mobile was very transactional, but the operators were doing the billing. So we got the money secondhand. And when I first heard about Bitcoin around about 2012, someone said, hey, you know what? You can actually buy coffee with this digital currency and it's completely independent and it works. So I thought, well, that's interesting enough. And I stumbled into an exhibition and there was an ATM machine there on one of the stands. And the guy said, hey, do you want to buy Bitcoin? And I thought, okay. And I took $50. I stuck it in the ATM machine. Outspat a piece of paper with a QR code on it. He said, there you go. And then I had to do a bit of research to find out what I could do with it. And from 2013 till date, I have been researching a lot, both formally and informally, and obviously buying coins and seeing what I could do with them, and thinking what impact Bitcoin, for example, and peer-to-peer currency has on humanity. So as an entrepreneur, I'm very interested in the business side of how this can actually work in everybody's hands day to day. So yeah, I got in 2013, good time for sure. That little piece of paper multiplied six times, I think, the money in that ATM machine. And that triggered obviously some excitement as well. So now I think it is a world-changing, humanity-changing, groundbreaking technology. And I'm a big evangelist, of course.
When did you come to Zilliqa?
Zilliqa, my first experience was actually when they did a sort of mini launch in Singapore. There was obviously a meetup group, an Ethereum meetup group, which had regular pitches. And one of the original founders, Jin Xu, was on stage talking about sharding. Just before I left for the UK, I spent a year in the UK. So 2017, I saw some written information. 2018, the actual pitch that I saw live. And it was amazing. I was just blown away with the transactions per second.
Mm-hmm.
The job itself was, I was headhunted. So I was sought out in Singapore for this role. And as I was a fan of the blockchain, I didn't have to think twice about going for it.
You know, Zilliqa was one of the early ERC-20s to ultimately migrate over to its own dedicated blockchain. You mentioned the focus has been on developing sharding and implementing that new technology well before people could expect to see it in Ethereum 2.0. This is a luxury that you have as a slightly smaller platform and project to be able to push the envelope on some of these developments. Can you walk through a little bit more around that transition and what it meant to leave the Ethereum ecosystem in some respects, even though you're still, you know, collaborative and able, I'm sure, to attract similar, you know, ecosystem participants for Zilliqa. The migration away from the ERC-20 to your own dedicated blockchain does, in some respects, you know, put a partition between this project and the folks that are otherwise looking to build on Ethereum or kind of leverage a lot of the tools that are already available. How do you get all the benefits out of Zilliqa that you want to in your own dedicated blockchain without losing all the community benefits, or at least very quickly replicating those community benefits so that there isn't a pretty steep fall off in support and you know, tools that are compatible with your blockchain and just generally, you know, community sentiment?
Yeah, so obviously we have a dedication to our own smart contract language, Zilla, and that is probably one of the most powerful attributes of the Zilliqa blockchain, the ability to write almost in natural language business processes, and it's safe by design. So it has logic, which is better than almost any other smart contract language I've seen. I think our chief science officer yesterday posted about Ethereum finally being able to separate immutable and mutable properties in a smart contract. You know, Zilliqa is way ahead of many blockchains right now. And so we've set our stall out, and we've invited the developer community to come to our platform with a number of different projects. We have something called Zilhive specifically, which invests in really good commercial ideas for startups and developers who want to create things on the Zilliqa blockchain. We also have a community effort called Zillacracy, which opens up to anyone who has an idea, and then a community will form around that and build a project. So our outreach to the developer community is intense and growing. We have a developer evangelist who will go out to many events and when they come back, and of course do online webinars and workshops to help build a bigger developer base. And we've also worked with people like Ivan on Tech to do Zilliqa and Scylla programming courses. And he's got a huge following. And there's been a massive increase in interest from the developer community for Scylla and for the Zilliqa blockchain. So there's been a significant investment, financial and in human terms, to drive the developer community to help understand the benefits of the Zilliqa blockchain.
Mm-hmm. And what were you know, when you came in, this was right after the migration, correct?
The token swap, yes.
Yep.
Just at that time.
Yep. So there was, you know, quite a bit of capital available to kind of reinvest in the ecosystem, you know, smooth out some of the, you know, growing pains to move in your own blockchain. What has been your role in deploying funds or catalyzing the rest of the ecosystem with a grants program, investment program, or is that a separately dedicated function on the Zilliqa team? How do you think about your relationship on the marketing side as community liaison?
Yeah, it's a very important bridge. We have a growth team specifically there to build the ecosystem, and people in specific roles within that team to grow different parts of that ecosystem. We have ecosystem VP, we have developer evangelist, we have growth analysts, and a lot of people working on the strategic push into the industry and into the communities to help build that part of the business. From a marketing point of view, what we need to do is report back on all of that activity. There is a massive amount of activity going on at Zilliqa. It's almost hard to keep up, and we are constantly issuing media announcements, placements, updates, videos, tweets. We're on Twitter a lot, updating the community on what we're doing. And I think over-engagement is the answer. I think over-communication is the answer. And I really want to get as much information out, even if it's almost just being created internally. We want to get that information out that we're working on something new or different or interesting, and we want the community to engage and give us feedback. So the staking proposal, for example, is a huge exercise in trying to get feedback from the community on what they feel is the best way to deploy it. And we've got some amazing feedback. There are some brilliant minds out there, and people are always happy to contribute. So from a marketing point of view, we are pushing every channel we can, but also doing a lot of social listening. So it's a two-way engagement with the community. But Zilliqa has such a huge amount of activity going on, I'm not short of ammunition to fire into the marketplace, which can get noisy at times, but we are constant and relentless in our messaging, I think.
How do you think about keeping a narrow focus or trying to carve out a niche on the Zilliqa platform? Yes, a lot of the early work was around sharding and having this, you know, highly scalable blockchain. But you know, the question that I always have for projects that don't have the network effect of Ethereum is that enough, right? Does it matter if you're faster, if all the infrastructure and the majority of mindshare sits at the, you know, largest asset, the largest couple of smart contract platforms? And with Zilliqa, you do have a couple of different types of applications that have gotten some traction. You've got the some DeFi initiatives where you're working with the Monetary Authority of Singapore. You, I believe, are still working with the Unstoppable Domains guys, the folks that actually just had a pretty meaningful integration with Opera last week, the top five web browser to incorporate .crypto domains. What, as you think about maybe the key themes of 2020, to me, it's stable coins, kind of sensor resistant web. So, you know, the kind of the Web3 thesis really playing out and accelerating in importance given what we're seeing in a macro level right now. And then there's the DeFi space, which has exploded and maybe come back down to earth marginally, but with everything that's going on with the coronavirus, just because it seems more experimental and less hard than some of the other areas of crypto development. Those are three wildly different things, and with a subscale ecosystem compared to the giants in the realm, do you have to pick, or can you focus on enterprise, focus on stable coins, DeFi, and kind of take an all of the above approach like you'd see from Ethereum?
Yeah, I think we are picking for sure. We're looking at open finance or OppFi as a way forward. We also, of course, are creating a DeFi exchange with a partner called Switchio. We have launched with Xverse, our partner in Singapore, the first effectively regulated stablecoin, XSGD, as part of the Straits X project, which is a very ambitious project to turn stablecoins from Southeast Asia into a really solid and usable property for things like remittance. Remittance is a critical part of the way of life in Southeast Asia. It's actually going to be a $270 billion business in the next 5 years. And Western Union and folks like that have been taking a big cut for many years. And we have the option now with XSGD to build remittance with countries like Indonesia and just take a very small fraction of the exchange to keep the network admin costs obviously covered. And that helps financial inclusion across many hundreds of millions of people. And we've seen bigger projects like Libra approach the same challenge, but I think we are going really country to country and group to group in a very specific way, which is practical and will scale very quickly.
Mm-hmm. If you rank over the applications right now, what are the kind of largest third parties that are building on Zilliqa, and are they focusing exclusively on Zilliqa? Are there certain applications that are more successfully deployed there? Where you're seeing any developers specifically choose you either through, you know, kind of a multi-platform evaluation process, and if you could just kind of elaborate on some of the things that those killer apps teams are looking for right now.
Yeah, so big picture, the transactional volume on Zilliqa is quite high. If you look at Flipside Crypto's analysis as well, they can give us good comparatives against other blockchains. So I think our usage is pretty high even today. And companies like Unstoppable Domains have driven a lot of traffic very early, which is a great proof point for us. Now moving into these larger partnerships with companies like Xwiz and Switchio, we have really achieved sort of enterprise level status where we can service really important projects at a high level and guarantee the security of the transaction. The project we've worked on with HG Exchange now is a securities token offering platform, effectively running fractional ownership of the US share market. So HG Exchange is working in the Monetary Authority of Singapore Sandbox, and they are building out an exchange whereby their members can purchase shares in a fractional way from, for example, the US stock market or even locally some of our bigger players. And I think that's another great way of showing how adaptable the platform is, but how focused it is on tokenization and that kind of logic behind where the financial community is going to go in future. So I think the XG Exchange project is going to come out here in Q2. It's going to be, again, the first regulated fractional ownership platform, we think, anywhere, and it enables the community to buy and resell parts of shares from other markets. So this is where we see the future of transactions, of value exchange, and I think it's probably one of the most exciting things we're working on. In terms of enterprise blockchain activity, there are now starting to appear quite a lot of RFPs. So we will always enter into the RFP wherever we see ourselves as offering a USP or a distinct value to enterprise partners for the next big blockchain implementation. So my focus, of course, is going to be enterprise because I see the money is there. It's a more traditional software sale in a way, but with all the excitement of the blockchain attributes. So we're in for a few RFPs as well.
How does that split work out between entities? Because the Zilliqa token is similar to Ether in that it's used to pay gas fees and is kind of the native currency of your blockchain. Is this like a Red Hat model? Is this just a traditional software as a service business sitting alongside of these tokens? Are you using the tokens as incentives during these RFPs? Where does that factor in to some of the enterprise client bids that you're putting in?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've been around for a while, so we know about Red Hat and how to roll out open source tech into a business environment. And I think that that's not a bad model to follow. There's obviously revenue to be made from professional services, from customization, from actively creating products that fit a specific business or corporate RFP. So that is quite an important line for us, business model going forward. But also then you're equally driving transaction fees and taking a small margin on that activity. So anything that drives action into the network that drives gas fees is good for us as well. Good for the miners.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the miners. So you're gradually switching over to a proof of stake mechanism. First off, how did you start the underlying staking mechanics, because you had a cold start problem when you were going through the token swap from ERC-20 to your own native blockchain, and then there was a recent consensus change that you initiated just in the last couple of months?
Well, I think just overall, the logic has always been to have this combination of proof of work and practical Byzantine fault tolerance as well. So we have split the logic into a very small component of mining to approve nodes, and then the nodes can process going forward the transactions. So the mining base is quite different from a Bitcoin mining, for example. So it only has to do a certain amount of mining in a 2 or 3 hour period to approve a block. We run 600 nodes per shard, and it's probably the most secure way of doing this kind of blockchain management. The consensus mechanism isn't really affected, I think, by any part of the issues that we had previously in the cold start, as you call it. So I think that as a platform, I mean, obviously we've gone up to 2,828 transactions per second on the test net. I think we're quite sure that it can process very quickly and securely anything that we need to do in future. And we have about 1,400 nodes which are doing the mining at the moment. And of course, we're going to add more seed nodes with the staking proposition. So the staking proposition has got a lot of excitement recently, and we're looking forward to the partnerships that we'll make with the nodes. And obviously, the more nodes we add, the more transactions we can process.
What do you think ultimately gets a project like Zilliqa into the top 20 in terms of developer activity, in terms of market cap, and what are some of the pitfalls like? And when, if ever, would there be a critical lower bound that you would worry about in terms of just project acceptance, holders, the speed at which you can rise and fall from this middle tier is fairly significant. It doesn't seem though that there's been that much turnover recently. It seems like you've kind of got these very clearly defined buckets in the top 20. You know who the major players are. The 2017 crop that have already faded away and more or less gone under. There's just these zombie chains. They're just floating around, the 300,000 range, and it doesn't really matter because people are just trading them a few dollars at a time on some of the more suspect exchanges worldwide. At the same time, everybody in that kind of middle tier is working feverishly on expanding their networks, actually finding some killer applications, and maybe it's just actually executing on some of these partnerships. But if you had to distill it down for both your team and for others that are in the situation, what ultimately moves the needle? And what keeps things moving forward?
Well, I think there's, again, two areas. Enterprise adoption, where there are already masses of transactions taking place, and we swap them over to the blockchain. This gives us an instant volumetric increase. So finding partners that are likely to scale their business, which is a day-to-day, recurring, ongoing thing, is really important. So working on those types of projects. My feeling is that the open finance activity and the stable coins will grow significantly. The project is very ambitious in terms of onboarding partners, wallets, enabling the free flow of that currency. So that will increase and amplify over time. My own personal interest is mass adoption. And I often think that it does come top down rather than bottom up. So if you can find partners who can switch people over to huge usage, whether they are entertainment companies looking to find different ways to receive payment and cut out the middlemen, or other ways of driving retail action. I think it also gets the headlines. So if you partner with a large brand and you help them acquire and onboard subscribers, for example, and they use cryptocurrency to pay, then you've got almost the perfect storm in our world. So that's my real interest, personal interest, and operational interest is to onboard some very large players who drive recurring, regular, and significant numbers of transactions.
That's very often going to be a nice to have, though, especially in this environment. Have you seen, given everything that's happening with the coronavirus, a slowdown in enterprise pilots or you know, serious engagements to switch over any of their internal processes to something that's more experimental? Because you know, you could talk about the throughput results that you have on the test net all you want, but for the larger entities, they're going to want to see some trial by fire, and now might be the time that they're getting much less risk averse, or sorry, much more risk averse than they were even at the beginning of the year. Have you had conversations stall? Where is the mindset of you know, some of the prospects that you've spoken with about, you know, various partnerships over the course of the last couple of quarters?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we're quite open and transparent in our communication to the community. The HD Exchange, looking at launching end of Q1, then if you look at the global macro stock market, it was just too volatile. It was really difficult to think that that would be a great time to launch that platform. So there was a recognition, I think, from all parties that it would be good to wait a while, let things settle down, and then come back when the time is right. So that does, of course, whether it was COVID-19 or, you know, any other economic activity by governments flooding the market with fiat, that it really helped perhaps change our view on how to and when to launch, not just launch for the sake of launching. But we haven't seen a slowdown in requests for information, for interest, for how to apply the blockchain to businesses. I don't think I've seen a busier bunch of people. We have nearly 30 staff. I don't think I've seen a busier bunch of people working on multiple projects simultaneously in any of my other eras, either the internet era or mobile era. So I think the blockchain era is 10 times that, maybe 100 times that. I don't foresee any real change in enterprise looking to adopt a blockchain strategy in any and all part of their business in the next 1 to 2 years. And actually now is a really good time to do it when everyone is drill down, focused internal, making sure everything works really well rather than distracted by other things that may be going on. So it may be counterintuitive, but I think people are really zeroing in on their core business, how to improve it, how to cut out extraneous costs, and how to make transactions work much more cheaply. So it's probably a good time.
Colin, where can people find you and get more involved with the project and start playing around with some of your libraries?
Well, we have our website, zilliqa.com. So Z-I-L-L-I-Q-A.com. And you'll see a lot of options there, obviously our entire history, and a way to apply to the Zillhive project. If you have an idea or you have a business that you want to try out on the Zilliqa blockchain, I'm on Twitter quite a lot. So at Colin Miles, all one word. And yeah, we have a huge number of Telegram groups. Telegram is probably the most exciting social media part of our community. It's really active and engaging. And you get a lot in real time from people there. So it's a fantastic buzz. It's an amazing industry. And I feel like I'm 26 again.
Excellent. Well, definitely appreciate having you on and love the paraphernalia in the background. Long live Kobe. For those of you who are tuning in either on YouTube or through your favorite podcast player, thank you for that. And please support our sponsors. Until next time, Colin, we'll have you on again soon. Until next time, everybody else, we're here Tuesdays and Thursdays with new podcast episodes twice a week, every week. I will look forward to seeing you soon in 2 days, 4 days, depending on exactly when it is you're catching this. Looking forward to the next one. It's late here in the Citadel, as you can tell, but appreciate Colin. You joining from Singapore, and with any luck, we'll be able to grab a beer soon in person, not just through Zoom.
Would love that. Cheers.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Peace.
That's a wrap. Thanks for listening.
New episodes of Unqualified Opinions go live weekdays at noon Eastern Time. You can follow me in the meantime on Twitter at 2BitIdiot if you want to continue the conversation or troll me. Otherwise, I'll see you next week.